As the Disability Royal Commission enters its third week of hearings, stories of violence, abuse and neglect have been a major feature. Set up in September, the hearings only began in Queensland at the beginning of this month, with an initial focus on the education sector. Commissioner Andrea Mason is a Ngunnawal Jarra and Crony Australian woman from Western Australia. She's previously held positions on the Federal Government's Indigenous Advisory Council and the NPY Women's Council in Central Australia. Commissioner, welcome to Speaking Out.
Thank you, Larissa.
Now, you were born in Western Australia but moved to Adelaide in the late 70s. How did your early life influence your world outlook?
I would say that my life was incredibly influenced by my family and my extended family in Kalgoorlie in the Goldfields area. My father, Ben Mason, was the first National Aboriginal Consultative Committee rep for the Goldfields, the first advisory council set up by the federal government. And so through young eyes, I saw him advocate for the people of the Goldfields. I saw him travelling extensively in the area, as well as travelling to Canberra with all the other representatives to advocate for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. We had to use our voice if we wanted things to change, but we also had to do it together in our community. But also Canberra was important in the scheme of changing policy and laws for the better. So those early impressions of my childhood have stayed with me, and they're threads that have stayed with me all of my life.
You've also been the head of the NPY Women's Council for the past decade. What were the biggest challenges of community advocacy in that capacity?
One of the areas of advocacy that we're doing at the time when I went to Women's Council was advocating for remote dialysis. It wasn't being provided in our region, and people were being transported to regional centres away from country. And the women could see an unravelling of authority and knowledge, because often it was the senior men and women who had to leave home to live in Alice Springs or Port Augusta, Perth, Adelaide. And they would often take half a dozen people with them to provide emotional social well-being, but also they were often the kids that were the translators, interpreters, and they were also leaving community. So the women, along with others in Central Australia, like Congress and Purple House and a whole bunch of people, Central Land Council, started to see that this dislocation was going to cause significant issues around social cohesion. I would say that put me right in the fray of advocating with government. And now we have dialysis across the NPY region 10 years later. So often that's how long things do take around these very deep, difficult issues of advocacy, like petrol sniffing and like alcohol reform and like dialysis. It often takes 10 years because often Aboriginal people are ahead in terms of the vision. So we've got to wait for people to catch up.
I'm really interested because you've had such a community-based grounding in the work that you've done. So I'm interested just your reflections on how that's shaped you for a national role now.
Larissa, that's a very good question, because when I went to Women's Council in 2008, I literally knocked on the door and asked if they had a job, and I knew this was working for my family because I'm a Ngunnawal, a woman on my father's side from the cross-border region on the WA side. And I thought that my experiences up to that point had given me, I would describe it as, a pretty substantial toolkit. What I was confronted with in the first year there at NPY Women's Council was that I needed to let a lot of stuff go if I wanted to take on the cultural acumen that the women knew, and as well cultural knowledge and authority that had been handed down to them. And this is going back, you know, thousands of years. And I say that because while I was learning about Jukruba and about song lines and about emotional social well-being from a cultural practice framework, I had to use other English words, business acumen words, to help Europeans and others outside of the region understand what was happening. And I think that as a person who was a bit of a bridge maker, an interpreter and a translator for non-Aboriginal people, what struck me was in Women's Council I could see that they very much had at the fore their responsibility to ensure peace, order and good governance. And to me, that's not about an Aboriginal way of doing business. That's actually about a moral imperative and actually a high watermark in looking after community. So for me, that's been my opportunity to get that message out, that we're not a problem to be solved. We're actually a solution for Australia in the way that we live well in this country.
What are the figures like for First Nations peoples with disabilities?
Well, we know that disability in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities is twice as prevalent. It's more complex in terms of co-occurring disabilities. And really, sadly, it's compressed within a shorter life expectancy compared to other Australians. So it's the urgency for us is real, and the change needs to happen quickly because we're suffering the most.
What sort of changes would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see what I saw at NPY Women's Council, that level of agency and empowerment and leadership brought across the country for our people with disability, working with leaders in a very trusted system that they have created and are delivering services and advocacy, and that First Nations people with disability are front and centre in that leadership and voicing what they see are the solutions. And the First Nations service sector and governance mechanisms standing with shoulder to shoulder, but they're leading that. That would be a real wonderful thing to see as a legacy from this Royal Commission.
How do you see the Disability Royal Commission being a stepping stone to that vision?
It's a very clear mandate that the inquiry has, because the advocacy leading up to the announcement of the Royal Commission was very clear that this is about violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation of Australians with a disability, and looking for ways where we can prevent people experiencing violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation. We've got to also look beyond the Royal Commission about how that reporting continues to happen. And also we have to look at how we can promote a society, an inclusive society that supports the independence of people with disability, and for them absolutely to live free of violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation. In relation to that, Larissa, I think Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have something to say, because prior to European contact in Australia, our operating rhythm was always about people being included in our society. And you would have seen this in your family circumstances, in that Aboriginal people, we didn't have a word for disability, because what we were looking at was looking at the unique human ability of that person and then including them because of that uniqueness, which actually, using the word of the Royal Commission, we had a culture of inclusion. So if we're looking about an inclusiveness through the work of the Royal Commission for people with disability, then I think Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have a story to tell. Even if we hear those stories of violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation from our communities, I think that we're using those to look at how we can absolutely strengthen the way that Aboriginal people know are the best systems that works for them to almost prevent or protect from that exploitative behaviour. So it's going to be an interesting process. The absolutely most important thing is to hear these personal stories, because service providers and advocacy organisations, we can present stories, but this Royal Commission is open and is really keen to hear stories from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disabilities of their experiences in those areas.
People often underestimate how important it is for somebody just to have the space to tell that story. Do you see it being transformative when you've been listening to that sort of evidence?
Absolutely. And we are very mindful of the sensitivity and how precious it is when people speak unfiltered and they're telling a truth. So we're looking at different ways of making it incredibly safe and secure for people to tell their stories. So because we're very conscious of that sometimes people are talking about circumstances for the first time. But we also want to capture stories to make sure that in the work and the reporting and then eventually the recommendations, those threads are there.
Andrew, you were involved recently in hearings in Townsville and did a day trip or a visit to Palm Island. What is it like when you hold hearings in remote areas and go to places where perhaps Royal Commissions don't go very often?
Well, I want to say that this Royal Commission wants to go to those places that are difficult to get to, because this is where people live, our community people with disability. We took the opportunity to go to Palm Island to talk to the community. We talked to leaders there. We talked to service providers, Aboriginal controlled organisations. And also we talked to First Nations people with disability. It's interesting because there was an echo of what I have known and understood from the desert. So there are commonalities in our various cultures. Of course, that's true because there's a level of wisdom in the way that our communities operate. We saw a wonderful school there, very much seeing the inclusion education policy in action with teachers and teachers' aides and working with various children to ensure that every child was included in the learning of that classroom. In Australia, Queensland is the only state with an inclusive education policy. All the other jurisdictions don't have that. So it was really important to have an opportunity to see that on Palm Island in the school. We also had a chance to speak to other members of the community and what they saw as work that has happened in the community to help people with disabilities be able to access services but also to live well. But also they took the opportunity to talk about what needs to change. So I said to them, that wasn't my first visit. I definitely will be back. Larissa, I think it's important to also mention that this is not just about the mainland, these are about our islands. Obviously, we're going to Tasmania, but islands like Palm Island and the Torres Strait and Mornington and off the coast of Darwin, Tiwi Islands and Bathurst and so forth. So because the island experience also needs to be understood by the Royal Commission.
The focus has been on the education system, as you've mentioned. From what you've been hearing, how extensive is disability discrimination in that sector?
Yes, we heard some really sad stories about violence and abuse that children with disability have experienced. The stories of First Nations people with disability in Queensland schools is going to be something that we will do as a future hearing, because we now understand that following a really important document, it was a review into Queensland schools and their approach to disability. That was a catalyst to now introduce this different regime of an inclusive policy of education in Queensland. And I think it's really important now to actually go and speak to families and advocacy organisations to understand what that change now means for them. Are they experiencing that level of inclusion? And we know that every person is different, every child is different. It has to be a child-centric way of looking at that individual child, like we did in the old days of looking at the individual humanity of that person, not as a way to exclude, but as an important way to include. So that'll be something that we'll be doing down the track.
The First Nations Disability Network has raised concerns over the increasing criminalisation of disability. Are they concerns that you share?
I am aware, living in Alice Springs, that we have a serious concern about fetal alcohol, acquired brain injury because of petrol sniffing. And so children who are now adults with those disabilities have a different experience, and particularly in terms of social behaviour. I don't say antisocial behaviour, because actually that disability is impacting on that person in different ways, in ways that I'll never understand. And the pathway of contact with the police, with the court system, then with prisons, youth detentions. And so I'm very mindful of that because of coming from Central Australia and the Northern Territory. And I think heard someone say the other day, the disorderly conduct, it's a stigma or a penalty because people are focusing on the disorderly conduct of the brain, the way that the brain works with these cognitive disabilities. And I think we have to look into how we can provide more support to young people and families rather than criminalising their behaviour and putting them in situations where they're not getting the health support and the psychiatric support beyond those institutions. It's really important for us to have a look at those areas.
There have been a number of previous inquiries into disability abuse that have turned up disturbing figures. From your perspective, particularly now that you're listening to stories and seeing what's happening on the ground, what do we need to do to turn these things around?
I think the value of a Royal Commission is that we can go into every part of our society and be able to really, for organisations to open their doors, to have us to understand how systems work, but also to compare those systems and those services with the personal stories of individuals and families. And so at the end of the day, the Royal Commission's value is to listen to those stories and to use those stories as the vehicle for change. So my job, Larissa, is really to get that message out now. I really, really appreciate the work that First Peoples Disability Network have done for many, many years. I know that the difficult time having lost a very dear leader and friend, and so I know that it has certainly spurred them to continue on with this, because so many leaders in the past have added their voice to having this opportunity, like a Royal Commission, to make the transformation happen. So this is what we're really focused on doing.
Just finally tonight, one thing that often strikes me when I listen to people who come on the show and share the hard work they're doing at the coalface with us, as you've done this evening, is how much energy and time and commitment you put into it. But we're also interested in well-being and looking after the people in our community who are our real assets. So I was wondering if you could share with us what you do to keep your spirit strong, where you get your strength from, and how you make sure you don't get burnt out.
Yeah. I live in Alice Springs, and so one of the things that I do is I actually get in the car and go out bush, and I might go to Honeymoon Gap or Stanley Chasm or Simpsons Gap and just sit there, find a place and just take it in and let that quietness and stillness just recenter and then re-energise me to go back and start sitting on that computer again or go back to the reading I have to do. But I also get energised by being in Alice Springs. It is a township, but it also is a very interesting place. There's lots of activities going on, and I find just being in the town, bumping into people, listening to their passion and their energy for the work that they're doing. There's a lot of strong Aboriginal women out there who are doing amazing work. So sitting in the mall there, if I'm having a coffee, I'm always bumping into people. So I think I'm quite social, so I like that side, but I absolutely love getting out into country and just sitting there and taking from it some vitality and some peacefulness. And yeah, it's worked for me, and that's why I love living in Central Australia.
Well, thank you so much for being with us this evening and sharing the important work that you're doing with the Royal Commission and your insights into a really important area that affects our people.
Thank you so much.
Andrea Mason is a Commissioner for the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability.